Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your EW3 report release conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star, then zero on your touchtone phone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce you to your host for today's conference, Ms. Ula Reeves. Ms. Reeves, please begin.
Great. Thank you, Doug. Good morning, everyone. My name is Ula Reeves, and I am the High Risk Energy Program Director for Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I'm based in Asheville, North Carolina, and I will be moderating this call today. First, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this morning. I'll get started just by giving a brief overview of why we are here and who is speaking today. The Union of Concerned Scientists convened the Energy and Water in a Warming World Initiative, or EW3, several years back to study the collisions between the power industry and our water resources. The report they are releasing today is the second in a series about the significant challenges our stressed water resources experience, particularly here in the Southeast, where we have heavy reliance on water-thirsty coal, nuclear, and gas-fired power plants. These challenges are only expected to worsen as our climate changes, bringing us more droughts and hotter temperatures. It is becoming more and more clear that water and energy planning must happen in tandem, and that the choices our utilities and regulators make today have big consequences for our water resources tomorrow. Today on this teleconference, you'll hear from a group of national and regional scientists and experts. First, we have John Rogers, who is the Union of Concerned Scientists Senior Energy Analyst and co-manager of the Energy Water Initiative. He has a degree from Princeton University and a master's degree in mechanical engineering from the University of Michigan. Next, we will hear from two state-based water experts and advocates. Cindy Lowry is the executive director of Alabama Rivers Alliance based in Birmingham. Cindy attended Auburn University and has a master's of public administration from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And Chris Manganello serves as Georgia River Network's policy director and is based in Athens, Georgia. He completed his graduate studies at the University of Georgia. He is currently working on a book titled Southern Water, Southern Power. Finally, we will hear from Dr. George Hornberger, who is a distinguished professor at Vanderbilt University in engineering and directs Vanderbilt's Institute for Energy and Environment. Dr. Hornberger is a member of the EW3 Scientific Advisory Committee and has a PhD in hydrology from Stanford University. Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is proud to host the telepress conference today and to present this excellent set of speakers to delve deeper into this new report and the significance of water and energy issues in Alabama, Georgia, and the rest of the Southeast. John, please take it away.
Great. Thank you, Ula. So the context for our research and the report is today's electricity, water, and climate landscape, where we see several prominent challenges, some of which Ula mentioned. One is that energy-water collisions are happening now as power plants' cooling needs run into growing water constraints around the country and make them worse. We saw this particularly last summer when 60% of the country was in drought, and we had lots of examples of these kinds of collisions, power plants in the Midwest, in the Northeast, and elsewhere, getting into trouble because of their water needs. We also see that climate change is set to make matters worse with its impacts on the availability of cooling water, adequate cooling water for power plants, even as the power sector continues to be a major driver of climate change through its emissions of heat-trapping gases. The next major piece of context is the big transition underway right now in the electricity sector. As electricity from coal plants shrinks, and power from natural gas and renewable energy grows, those shifts, those changes represent a real opportunity, a tremendous opportunity. Decisions about which power plants to retrofit or retire, what kind to build, have both near-term and long-term implications given power plants' long lifetimes, their carbon emissions, and their water needs. Power plants that need cooling water will be at risk over their long lifetimes from declining water availability and rising water temperatures, whether that's from climate change or extreme weather events or competition from other users. And power plants, in turn, will make things worse, will worsen the water risks for other users. That brings us to the question of whether we can do better and how, which was the focus of our research. Our research examined various options for meeting our future electricity needs and looked at each electricity pathway's impacts on water resources, carbon emissions, and power prices. We focused on several key scenarios, a business-as-usual pathway, and others that took different approaches to meeting a strict carbon budget to address the power sector's contributions to global warming. Our distinctive approach combined two models, one on the electricity side and another for water, to analyze the implications of water use in the power sector under different electricity pathways for the country as a whole, for various regions, and for select river basins in the southwestern and southeastern United States. In brief, what we found was that a business-as-usual pathway would involve much heavier dependence on natural gas. That's not a surprise for anybody familiar with the boom in natural gas at this point. But that means that kind of pathway would not cut carbon emissions from current levels. It also means that it would miss lots of opportunities to address water issues. It would, for example, lead to big drops in water withdrawals on the order of 80% reductions by 2050. But those would mostly not happen until after 2030. And it would also lead to no drops in water consumption, the amount that power plants evaporate in the cooling process, until after 2030. In our water-constrained present, a 20-year delay leaves the power sector and its customers unnecessarily vulnerable to drought and leaves other water users in unnecessary competition. And we looked at various ways of thinking about local impacts, such as temperature, and found additional challenges with the business-as-usual pathway. In our research, we then juxtaposed that with other scenarios, including one that included a diversified electricity mix strong on renewable energy, such as wind and solar, and energy efficiency. And we found that that scenario could deeply cut our power generation's carbon emissions and water impacts. Under such a scenario, water withdrawals would drop by 97% from current levels by 2050, so much farther than under the business-as-usual pathway, and water consumption could drop by 85% by 2050. Those reductions would also occur much sooner under a renewables and efficiency case, such that by 2030, so just less than two decades out, water use would be less than half of both today's levels and those under the business-as-usual case. But our combination of models also allowed us to look at regional and even local effects of different pathways, how electricity choices would affect water available in reservoirs or groundwater withdrawals or river flows or water temperatures. I'll give one example of that's in the report. We found, for example, that a renewables and efficiency pathway could help to counteract local water temperature increases that business as usual and a warming climate might otherwise bring. So we looked in particular, for example, at the Coosa River above Lake Weiss on the Alabama-Georgia border. It's one of a handful of landlocked river systems where striped bass are reproducing naturally. That's an important species for anglers, but one that's sensitive to high water temperatures. Under the conditions in our modeling, which included gradual warming and an extended drought, temperatures on the Coosa River would be expected to exceed the important threshold temperature of 90 degrees Fahrenheit 6 days a year on average over this decade, and more often later. In fact, under a business-as-usual scenario, water temperatures at that location would exceed 90 degrees Fahrenheit an average of 18 days per year in the 2040s, so toward the end of our analysis period. Under the renewables and efficiency scenario, by contrast, with the retirement of upstream power plants, river temperatures would be 3 to 13 degrees Fahrenheit cooler in midsummer and stay below the 90-degree threshold during the whole decade of the 2040s. We also looked at the economics of these different pathways and found that a diversified renewables and efficiency path would also lower costs to customers, with customer bills being much lower than under business as usual. While we focused the report on the business as usual and renewables and efficiency scenarios, we also included other options that we modeled, including one that prioritized coal with carbon capture and storage, and with particular relevance to the Southeast, nuclear energy. Because of the high water use per unit of electricity for each of those technologies, that scenario would lead to greater water use, we found, by 2050 than under the other scenarios. In fact, under that scenario, in 2050, water consumption in the power sector would be 14% above today's levels, more than 40% higher than under business as usual, and almost eight times that under the renewables and efficiency case. While there may be potential for improving such technologies and such scenarios, it's clear that low carbon options aren't necessarily low water. But we found in our research the broader array of fuel and technology options available today mean we can already design an electricity system with far lower water and climate risks. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, John. Cindy?
Yes, hello. I want to thank, as Ula said, my name is Cindy Lowry. I'm the Executive Director of the Alabama Rivers Alliance, and I want to thank UCS and SAFE for allowing us to be a part of this important project. The report is a very timely one from an Alabama perspective. For those of you that aren't familiar with the Alabama Rivers Alliance, we're a statewide river advocacy organization, and we've been working for years on issues of water quantity and quality in Alabama. Generally, it's more difficult to visually see the impacts of our electricity plants on our water resources in Alabama because the plants are positioned on really large main stem rivers that have historically been altered by dams, and this allows for sometimes for the impacts to be hidden. But if you look at the numbers, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, 86% of Alabama's water withdrawals in 2005 were for cooling power plants. So that's a very large water use in Alabama. The Alabama Rivers Alliance focused on water quantity and quality issues, and we've seen in recent years that actually Alabama state leaders and citizens and even businesses are recognizing the limitations to our seemingly abundant water supplies. And as this report mentions, we do have threats to our water supplies, even though they are somewhat plentiful. We have probably the most popularly known threat is, of course, interstate competition. Most of our major river basins start in other states, and we see consistent competition for water on that front. But we also have, even though it's rained a lot this year, we're not too far removed from the drought that we've had over the last several years and the impacts that that had. We also have continued increased demand. Our farmers want to irrigate more here in Alabama. Therefore, we have a new large demand that looms on the horizon. And probably of greatest concern to our organization is the fact that we don't have a plan for how we're going to manage our water resources in the future. And that brings me to why this report comes at such a critical time for Alabama. There are actually four really important opportunities that are happening right now and or on the horizon that will impact our water resources for decades to come. And the information that's provided in this report can really have an impact on the decisions that are made at this crucial point. The first one of those is our state's effort to develop a comprehensive water management plan. The governor of Alabama, Robert Bentley, initiated an effort last year directing five state agencies to develop a comprehensive plan, and their report of their recommendations are due to him on December 1st of this year. So our organization has been playing a major role to get this message out statewide and to try to have stakeholder input in this important decision. And understanding how much water we have, how much water we need, and how we're going to manage it in the future must definitely take into consideration the large water use of our energy sources. The second and third opportunities that I want to mention are primarily dealing with the Coosa River Basin and the Alabama-Coosa-Tallapoosa Basin as a whole. And those are the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission just issued a new license for the seven hydropower dams on the Coosa River. And the Corps of Engineers is also finalizing their updated manuals for how they're going to operate the ACT basins. Decisions made in both of these processes are going to last for the next 30 to 40 years. We're talking a generation of decisions that can impact the water resources of Alabama. And as John mentioned earlier, the report brings to light the threats of increased thermal pollution from power plants on the Coosa River. Under the business-as-usual scenario. And thermal pollution is not really something that's historically been discussed much in Alabama, but it can have a major impact on aquatic life. And our Coosa River Basin in Alabama is basically our poster child for loss of aquatic species. So we certainly need to be making decisions that move in a different direction with the Coosa River and bringing those species back to life and or protecting the ones that are still there. So these two issues on the Coosa are very important. The last opportunity I want to mention for Alabama that really brings this report to critical timing is that the recent issues, and this is a little bit less of my expertise, but I think it's important to mention it because it has been a hot topic. The recent issues involving the Public Service Commission's review of utility rates in Alabama is opening up an entire discussion about our energy sources, what they have to do with our rates, and what kind of planning and oversight is going into the decision-making about where our energy is going to come from in the future. So as this report appropriately recommends, we must capitalize on these opportunities and figure out a way to effectively integrate the planning for our future energy and water needs. We have to make smart choices now because, as I said, these opportunities only come around once in a generation, and all four of these are happening right now in Alabama. So I think that the information in this report is really important to our state and to the citizens and the water resources in our state. So I really thank the UCS and SACE for putting this together, and I will turn it over to the next speaker.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. Next we have Chris.
Hi, yes. My name is Chris Manganiello. I'm Policy Director at Georgia River Network, and I also would like to thank UCS, SACE, and the Energy in the Water and the Warming World Initiative for involving me and my organization. We're a statewide organization working all over the state of Georgia, and what I've learned in the last few years is that water and energy are really clearly connected in Georgia, and the decisions that we make today matter for tomorrow. For example, Georgia Power and its southern company, Cousins, withdraw water and generate electricity at 15 fossil fuel and nuclear facilities, as well as 19 hydroelectric dams. These facilities are distributed all over the state's river basins, and these generating units rely on water from 8 of Georgia's 14 major river basins. So close to 50% of the state's total water use is used for electrical generation. Given this broad energy and water footprint, there are examples of energy and water collisions, one of which John mentioned on the Coosa River, as well as on the Chattahoochee at Plant Farley and the Altamaha at Plant Hatch. Those two last examples are nuclear facilities. But ultimately, again, this report matters because Georgia's economic, water, and climate future are riding on the energy choices that we make today. Decision makers must think reasonably and coherently about future energy generation and how to allocate limited water supplies for multiple sectors because they don't always get it right. As an example of perhaps one missed moment would be Georgia's regional water planning that began in 2004 and wrapped up in 2011. Information on water use by existing thermoelectric power plants, which at the time was the largest single water user in Georgia, that information was delayed by the utilities until 3 months before the first regional water plan drafts were due in 2011. Furthermore, not all proposed plants in Georgia were included in that original regional plan. Plus, there were also existing plants just kind of on the edges of Georgia and other states, but were dependent on water flowing from Georgia, such as plants far south. Those were also excluded from the water plan. So I think that what the UCS and EW3 report says here is that, you know, this is an important moment for which anybody who's like Alabama is about ready to embark on statewide regional water planning, that information from utilities needs to be coming out much earlier and more clearly in the process. But here in Georgia, we also do have kind of a recent hopeful decision point. Just last week, Georgia Power and the Public Service Commission had an opportunity to make a choice to invest in renewable energy and retire coal-burning units. During the public debate between the consumer advocates, the Georgia Public Service Commission, and Georgia Power, there was an anti-solar crowd that said that renewable energy was unreliable. In reality, as history and the recent Energy and Water in a Warming World report demonstrates, the existing coal burners and nuclear units have been vulnerable to unreliable water supplies for a very, very long time. Thankfully, the Public Service Commission and Georgia Power decided to follow a water smart path that will help reduce carbon emissions and could reduce some pressure on already contested water supplies. Georgia Power's next 20-year integrated resource plan will add 525 megawatts of new solar, and the company will retire 15 coal and oil-burning units. While this is all good news, we must remember that Georgia Power and other utilities continue to operate major coal-burning facilities. And Georgia Power, of course, is adding two new nuclear reactors at Plant Vogtle. This business-as-usual approach to coal and nuclear will continue to stress water resources in Georgia. So to summarize why I think this Water Smart Power Report matters, it matters because energy and water continue to collide in Georgia. Decision makers have missed opportunities to make clean energy choices to avoid those collisions, and we must continue to make bold, water smart steps because climate change will further compromise our energy and water systems.
Great. Thank you, Chris. And last but not least, we have Dr. Hornberger.
Thank you, Ulla. This is George Hornberger. As Ulla said, I'm a professor at Vanderbilt University. I've been on the EW3 advisory team and followed with great interest the development of this project. As John outlined, there were very substantial analyses done that not only pointed out problems, but also articulate the steps that can be taken to avoid at least the worst aspects of the water-energy collision. The analyses of the current stresses and the projections of future water and energy demands presented in the EW3 report indicate that we really should choose options for the future that will lower the risks of severe consequences. The good news is that a key point in the report is that there are good options to choose from. We of course have to be cognizant of the fact that infrastructure investments, particularly investments in energy, involve long-term commitments. And therefore, the choices that we make today really will have impacts for decades. There is, however, as others have pointed out, a real opportunity to make wise choices. The opportunity is right now because the power sector is at a point of transformation. The report refers to this as a pivot point, and the opportunity for making these choices is current and will not arise again for quite some time, in my opinion. I think a main message from the report is a recommendation that has a strong emphasis on energy efficiency and on the use of renewables. This is pointed out, this is a water smart path. John mentioned that water withdrawals from surface waters and groundwaters would drop by something like 97% by 2050 under the scenario that is analyzed in the report. And water consumption, withdrawal, of course, is water taken out of, let's say, a river, and some of which is returned at a higher temperature through cooling for electricity generation. Consumption is water that goes directly to the atmosphere through evaporation. And consumption under the Water Smart Path recommended would drop by something like 85%. Furthermore, of course, the water quality issues, including water temperatures, would be beneficial. Water temperatures would drop by many degrees in rivers and lakes that are currently impacted by once through cooling from coal or nuclear plants. And as I would put it, the icing on the cake is that the path is economically favorable to consumers. So it really looks like a very much a win-win situation if the decisions are made. There are, I think, part of the report lays out some essential concepts and necessary steps. I think in the short term, the necessary steps, as other speakers have mentioned, are really rely on retiring aging coal-fired plants. This is really a key to moving forward. This, I think, is a critical aspect. I think that energy efficiency has to be prioritized. Regardless of the detailed path that we choose for the future, energy efficiency is going to be a major, major consideration. As the state people from Georgia and Alabama mentioned, the planning issues, and I would say not only water resources planning, but the fact that planning for both water and energy has to be done together. And it has to be recognized that there are considerable risks, including prolonged drought, when these decisions for the future are being made. And finally, I would note that we have to recognize that the terms water smart, inverted commas, and low carbon, inverted commas, are not independent concepts. These are linked. As the report concludes, and I'm going to quote here because I can't do better, understanding and addressing the water impacts of our electricity choices is urgent business. For a secure supply of water and power, we must get this right. And as an ending comment, as a university professor, I do note that these issues of water and energy resources and their wise use are really at the forefront of the minds of not only professors at universities, but students as well. And I will note that ongoing research, the university contributions tend to be not only training students, but doing research. And I think ongoing research in science and natural science, engineering, as well as social science, because behavior of people is really important. And this is aimed at providing useful information for addressing these water, energy, and in our case, water, energy, and food interactions. With that, I will turn it back to you, Ulla. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Hornberger, and thank you all for your excellent comments. We will now move into the question and answer session, and I want to let our media folks know that we also have Sarah Barzak on Southern Alliance for Clean Energy staff available during the Q&A. Doug?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. One moment for our first question. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. And Ms. Reeves, it appears we have no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, maybe we should give it a few minutes, let folks just process the thoughts. I don't necessarily want to end immediately because there might be a question that pops up here. I will say while we're waiting that if folks have additional questions after the session or additional media queries, you can contact Southern Alliance for Clean Energy's media line at 865-235-1448. We will also have an audio recording available, and you can contact Eric Bontrager at the Union of Concerned Scientists via email. His email address is ebontrager@ucsusa.org. The full report and executive summary are available at ucsusa.org/water-smart-power altogether. You can also visit cleanenergy.org. Do we have any questions at this time, Doug?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. And Ms. Reeves, it appears we have no questions in the queue.
Okay, John, would you like to provide any kind of closing comments?
I'll just say that it's pretty clear that we set electricity and water on a collision course years ago. Maybe we didn't know better, but now we do. And with research like this and our understanding of the science of climate change and of water and our knowledge of the options on the electricity side, we think we can do better. And we think that now is the time to build a power system that's hardwired not for risks but for resilience. And we hope that this report will help further those discussions and make that possible. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, John. Okay, I guess one last opportunity and call for questions.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at the time, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. And Ms. Reeves, we have no questions in the queue.
Okay. If there are no questions, then we will conclude this teleconference at this time. And as I mentioned, there will be an audio recording available through Eric Bontrager at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Thank you all very much for attending today.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Have a wonderful day.